Alton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Each week, our host will introduce you to a various cast of characters you'll only find here. Each host will share experience, knowledge, and expertise regarding their years in the fire service, allowing you to call in and speak with them live, an experience you can only find on Fire Engineering Talk Radio. So thanks for joining us. Enjoy and stay safe.
All right, all right. Welcome to another Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. For those of you that are listening, if it sounds like my voice is a little out of it, I'm not feeling too hot. And no, I don't have the Rona. I know maybe that's a little taboo. We're not supposed to joke about it. But, you know, those who do listen to me know that I'm Dave McGlynn, and I basically just say what's on my mind with zero filter. So with that said, I'm not feeling good, but I got my tea here. I've gotten copious amounts of DayQuil and vitamin C and elderberry and all that good stuff to try to bring you as best of a show as I can. If you hear me doing sniffles or anything like that, like I said, I apologize. But I again promise, one, social distancing, you're listening, so you're not going to catch it from me. But two, I promise I don't have the Rona, at least yet. So with that said, for those of you that are first-time listeners, thank you for listening. If you guys haven't listened before, my show's been on the air for about 2 years now. Thanks to Fire Engineering and Bobby Halton and Diane Rothschild and Pete Parochial and everybody else that's given me the opportunity to get on the air and be able to spread my message and talk to some of the great people like I have here tonight. This show's about networking. The name of the title of the show is Networking for Success. You're networking with Dave McGlynn. I get to talk to people from all over the world, all over our great country, to give us their perspective on leadership, on what they value, on principles, on success, on networking, on training, and all these different matters. And I'm able to use Fire Engineering as the outlet to bring that that message to you guys. Tonight, I'm joined by yet another great guest and a personal friend of mine. His name's Derek Fleeman. So for those of you who don't know him, it looks like it's spelled Fleming, but it's Fleeman, I promise. So those of you that don't know Derek, I'm going to throw this out there real quick. He's from Arkansas. So even though it says Fort Wainwright, Alaska, I promise when he starts talking, you're going to be like, oh, this guy doesn't sound like Sarah Palin, because he's not from Alaska. He's a full-on country boy with a very strong southern draw. So, you know, you're going to have to just bear with that and understand that he's been up in Alaska for a long time, and he's going to elaborate on that. But he is originally from Arkansas and never lost that country draw. So Derek is now currently a battalion chief with the Fort Wainwright Fire Department. He started his career in 1998, serving our beautiful U.S. Air Force, where he served as a firefighter. After he got out of the Air Force, he got his first civilian firefighting job in the state of Alabama. From there, he made his way out to Alaska, where he rose the ranks to captain. He was a captain for quite a bit of time, understood the values and principles of what it takes to be a good leader and a good mentor, and recently, over the past year, got promoted to battalion chief, where he's a supervisor and oversees the crew of multiple people for his company and his department. Derek's very passionate about leadership. He's very passionate about training. He is a fireman's chief, if there is the term. He definitely likes to get down and work with the guys, and he will not have someone do something that he wouldn't do himself. I know that personally, and I also know that just from people that have worked with Derek, and we'll touch on that tonight too. He's a member of the farthest north fools up in Alaska, and he teaches his men and is trying to also dabble into taking what he knows through all the years of him doing what he's doing to a bigger circuit. So with that, Derek, thank you for joining me tonight, brother. I greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you for inviting me to the show, Dave. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So there you go, guys. You hear his accent. I wasn't lying about it. So
that's enough draw.
So, yeah, man, I love it. You know, my favorite thing, and we're going to talk about more stuff, but my favorite thing is that time that we went to Waffle House down in Tuscaloosa, and just it was like you and that Southern Alabama lady at like 2 a.m. were just going back and forth, and I almost hit a point that me and Scott, we didn't even know what you guys were saying anymore. Like, we were just looking at each other like, people say we don't sound right because we're from Jersey. All right, bro, let's dive into it. So tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, and where you're from, and what inspired you to join the fire service.
Well, you touched on it a little bit. I joined the Air Force in 1998. I served 4 years. After that, I became a federal firefighter, and the next 22 years have been a whirlwind. I really enjoy the training, like you were talking about. I enjoy immersing myself in the fellowship with the fire family we have, and I seek a lot of guidance and mentorship from everybody I work with, friends, family, and a bunch of the bigger name fellas like Rick Lasky, Bobby Halton, Kurt Isaacson, Nick Martin, Mark Von Appen, and some of those guys. But what inspired me to join the fire service was actually my cousin, Lee Lane. And he was an Air Force fireman as well, and he got out and became a municipal fireman. So I was about 10 years old when that happened, until I left home at 19, and that's where it all began.
Beautiful, man. I know most of your story because we've been in touch over the years, but, you know, it's nice for the audience to hear that. You know, we have some people that listen in that, excuse me, you know, they either served in our military and they haven't gotten that position yet or that job, or, you know, they don't know where they're going or whatever. So it's nice to see how over the past 22 years, you know, serving our country and understanding values and then like some of those greats that you just named, you know, like Rick Lasky and all of them. You know, how you were able to get more passionate about it, more in tuned with it, and really prideful about it and have a love for it and just make what I consider, you know, a great career out of it. So you having done those things through your career, you served as a captain, now you're a battalion chief, right? So with those positions,
yes,
you know, as a captain, now as a battalion chief, what are some of the challenges that you faced?
A lot of them recently have been the biggest obstacle have been administrative issues. That was kind of a learning curve I had to dive into and figure out the roadmap for that. But it all stemmed from, firefighters everywhere, they had these issues with leadership, chief officers, and where I'm going with this is a lot of them feel there's a lack of trust. There's no relationship. We never step out of our offices to get involved and learn the backstory of each one of them. So those are some of the biggest challenges I've faced so far. I just have a general belief in knowing your people. I know it sounds a little cliche, but I think that's root of it. You got to build relationships. We got to earn trust. Step in and do the little things from time to time. Get out of the office. Do a chore or two with them. Get out and train with them a little bit. Not so much training either. It's evaluating too. But that's been working for me and for the crews I work with. I really believe it's about a culture. We've got to develop a culture. It's up to the whole team. And what I mean by culture is the workplace mindset. The overall expectation that each firefighter has of us chief officers and the expectation we have of them, the way we conduct ourselves, and these kind of things, the training we have, the relationships we build, it's learned and shared both ways. I mean, most of it happens at the kitchen table, late in the evening, wee hours of the morning. We're talking about morals, our values, our ethics, our families, the way we should treat each other. You know, a lot of us always end up saying we want a family-oriented, courteous environment to work in. Well, that's kind of what we have at home, too, because after all, it is called a firehouse. You know, and part of our job as chief officers is to develop and guide a common-sense fire department. We want the people to think for themselves. We don't want them to be us. We want to make them the best version of them.
Yeah, so a couple things you covered there, bro, that are things that are near and dear to me as well. So first of all, you say it may seem a little cliche getting to know your people. There's nothing cliche about that. It may seem misunderstood because, unfortunately, a lot of people in the leadership business suck at it, and they don't understand that the first step to being a good leader is starting to know your people. So not that I'm like patting myself on the back, because I learned this through my experiences, through failures and hardships, and through some great mentors and some of the books that I've read. So in the new place that I work, I knew that there was a cultural thing that needed to be changed or improved on. And I knew that coming there wasn't very popular about me coming there. So I literally have spent the past 6 months doing my best to getting to know them. I've sat with each one of them individually. I've talked to them about who they are, gotten to know them on a personal level, gotten to understand what they value, what they don't value, what their likes and dislikes are, what makes them tick. And, you know, I've had, knock on wood, I've been able to have success in an environment where I thought it was going to be a lot harder, because I've been, excuse me, I've been very fortunate to have some great key players surrounding me that have been willing to help me, contrary to an opinion they may or may not have had coming in. You know, I got a captain there that wasn't fully on board with me coming there, and he's probably my most go-to person for a lot of things when I vent, when I want, you know, when I need information on some, and he's been nothing but helpful, and I greatly appreciate it. I got an inspector there that I've known for a couple of years now that, you know, same thing, was a little resistive or questionable about how I was going to do, and he's been nothing but a great help. It's not about winning people over as much as it's recruiting teammates. And I know that sounds cliche, but it's really what it is. I mean, you know, we have something to do. We can't do it by ourselves. And the best way to be able to form those relationships, like you said, at the kitchen table, is really getting to know your people. Because they're human beings at the end of the day, you know, and they're grown adults. And if they feel like you don't know them or you don't care about them, that you just see dollar signs or numbers or whatever it is, then they're never going to get behind you to support you, you know? And I know that that's something that you do and you believe in. And it's just, it's unfortunate that a lot of people don't understand that. Cause to me, I feel like it's so simple. Like you just talk to them, you know, it's that easy. I don't know, but it seems to be pretty hard for some people. What do you think?
No, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. And kind of touching on the subject a little more too, it's, just like through the daily duties, the tours, the training, on the emergency scene, these guys are looking to us like we're looking to them for some ownership and some buy-in and some trust. And it goes back to the culture that we're trying to create. And, you know, how do we do that? Give me a minute. The wife's coming home. I'm in the garage, and she just popped the door, so I'm shutting it. Let me get back at this. With the bells related.
I love you. Anybody who knows you knows this is too, just man. A normal thing. It's so great.
It's Corona
like, what the hell is he talking about? Hold on. All right, go ahead, man. Keep going, man. I mean, the best of your drive.
You know, how do we do it? Well, it's about developing relationships. These guys, and we're looking to them for influence. What's influence mean even? Well, that means presence. Presence of chief officers being around the men and women, coaching, mentoring, guiding. And what they want to see out of us is not talk. They want to see us prove that through our actions, you know, kind of walk the walk. They want to see us make common sense. I think aggressive decisions in the house and out of the house, you know, it goes back to, I think a lot of things, character, integrity, pride, initiative, you know, service. That's what we're in the business for. That's what our industry's about. It's service, right? Well, it's not just service to the community. It's service to those we lead. Service to those who follow us. Service to the people we follow. I learn a lot of stuff. Not from the great mentors or the close friends I have like you and a really good friend of mine like John Heinrichs and Bobby Ross and some other fellows to name a few. But I learn it at the table a lot of the time. And it's through the little talks that get personal and, you know, kind of solving the world's problems. We've got to have accountability. You know, these guys are looking to us to have answers, you know, and I'm looking to them to have answers too. Like I said before, we're not wanting robots. We want free thinkers. Sacrifice. You know, we do a lot of sacrifice. We spend time away from our family. We're going to training events outside trying to get better. It's a whole lot of different things. But I think the best way to help get at it and produce a culture we want is by action and example and building these relationships. I know what I do at work. I take a step back. When I got promoted even, one of the first things I did, I think it was shortly afterwards, about a week into it, had an all-hands meeting, and we all sat down, and I made a short list of expectations based off my beliefs and the organization's beliefs. It was very short, printed out, handed them all a copy, and we talked about it. But I told them, I said, this is not just my expectations. This is what I want us to believe in together. You know, this is our house. We're gonna develop this. And if you're in, you're in. You know, everybody else will come on board as they see it work. And you know, it's worked. A year ago, we were in a different place. Now, things are a lot better. People are doing a lot more on their own. They've got a belief in someone. Multiple people. I could go on and on about it, but, you know, we all have a way.
Amen. You stole my thunder when you mentioned John. I was going to talk about him, so I'll dive into it before we go into the next part of this. But no, you're good, brother. You're good. So talking about John, you know, there's another guy that gets it. You know, he's going through his own version of struggles with understanding the culture there, and I get it. So John comes to where I'm at as a captain. He's got a lot of experience, as you know, as a captain prior to his arrival here. But this position is a supervisory captain. So for the listeners that don't understand what that means, it just means that you're basically somebody who does people's evaluations and appraisals. In the Department of Defense, we have lead captains or lieutenants, and then we have supervisory captains. It's just some places are different than others. That's about as much as I can explain that. So it's new for John, and it's new for our organization to have a supervisory company officer. I think he's getting well into it. John clearly knows his job, and I think that a lot of people who were naysayers or maybe questioning of him have probably started to notice that as he's started to grow into what he's doing there and become a team member, that he really knows his job. John's a good training officer, and he's not even the training officer. He's been a huge help of mine. He's very savvy when it comes to the technical rescue stuff. And, you know, I am very happy that he's there because he's been a godsend for me. He's somebody who I could talk to late at night. Him and I will stay up late at night. I don't know if that's just because he's still on Alaska time. So the poor guy doesn't go to sleep until late. But he's been a huge, huge godsend for me. He's a very sound, reserved, calm approach to my very, openly hard on his sleeve kind of approach, and he's kind of helping me even that out when I talk with him. And John's a really great guy, and that's the point in the networking thing. You know, I wasn't part of the decision process for who we were picking up into our new captain position, and you know, when I had heard that we were going this route, I had reached out to you, and you had said, listen, it's a huge loss for us. And to hear a guy like you say that, that was like, okay, well, I know that we must be getting the right guy, because you're one of those people I hold up there with your opinion on people. And the fact that you would say it's a huge loss for us is, you know, it just sums it all up right there. And it has been, I can imagine, because he's been a huge gain for us and the road ahead and what we're trying to do and where we're going. Yeah, John's really going to fit into that, and he's been nothing but a home run. So, you know, that kind of points into the whole networking thing is is that, you know, you and I know each other, and we've just known each other over the past few years just through us going to training together and staying in touch. And now we have this connection of both of us having the pleasure to work with a guy like John. You know, he's just a really good person. He kind of makes you a better version of yourself when you're around him. You know, whether that's, attributing that to his wife, keeping him grounded, Sheridan, you know, she seems really cool. But just all in all, you know, John's just, he's not hypocritical, which is what I like. You know, like, I curse a lot, and I have a very, just a hard exterior. And he's a guy that he looks past that. You know, he doesn't judge me off of the way I talk, even though he would seem to not be a person that meshes well with me. And so far we gel really well together. And I think you get that too, because you and I, you're not as open with the words or as loose as the words as I am, but you and I are a lot alike, where we're very passionate and very open about our passion for certain things. And we both got, you know, you got along with John really well there, and I get along with him really well here. So, you know, it's just, that's another beauty of it, is just, here's a guy that came from quite literally the other side of the country, you know, where Sarah Palin could see Russia from her backyard. And now, you know, he's all the way over here, and he's just fitting right in, you know, and he's doing really well. And speaking about training, you know, as we move into the next part, you know, he's very pro on training, and you touched on a few things, and that's the next question I'm going to ask is, you know, that being that officer wants to train with their people and all that, and John really wants to do that, you know, even if I don't have something specific on the schedule, or even if I had something specific, John will meet the objectives, and then he'll want to go back out in the afternoon or whatever to do some additional work, which is just beautiful. So, you know, as a company officer, as a chief officer, you know, even just in the fire service in general, excuse me, like I said, man, everybody bear with me. I'm just not 100% today. why is training important in fire and emergency services?
Well, we got to practice like we're going to play. If we don't, there's going to be a breakdown somewhere. We're going to fail at some point, and something's not going to get checked or accomplished. A decision won't be made. A task won't be completed. Training is really important, and it needs to be realistic. We don't need to have these Armageddon-type drills or exercises where there's 15 things going on at once. We need to stick kind of to the basics in a sense. You know, there's a building fire. We pull some lines. We do some defensive operations. We cover rescue. We cover search, overhaul, and that kind of stuff. We need to be on the drill field as often as we can. You know, there's some things that we're going to pick up out of a book, but the real tale is going to be when we put our hands on it and get at it. And training program. You got to have a program where we're hitting all the basic topics. We're hitting some extra topics. And you got to seek it from outside avenues and venues as well. You know, we can do a lot of good hands-on training in the house. But a lot of the real stuff, I think where we're going to pick up more is going to be outside of our department. when we go to a conference or a local training event, because that's when you're going to get the vision, the ideas, and the way from lots of different people, lots of different departments. And everybody's got a different spin to it. And, you know, it just adds 10 different tools to our already growing toolbox. Training, though, needs to be continuous. We got to put some passion into it. We got to treat it as if it's going to be the real thing. It's going to be surprised. It's going to be unexpected. We just got to get at it. We do a lot of training at Fort Wainwright. We do a lot of joint training as well. And that's where we really come together as a community. That's another topic, community training, where we can all pull our resources together and come up with one solid game plan when something happens. Like where we're at right now, we've got 11 borough fire departments. We do mutual and automatic aid with each one of them. And we often do train with them just so we're all familiar with each other's faces, the way we do things, and we can put together a good package to serve the community. I don't know if that's where you were going with it, but that's kind of what my answer to it is.
No, it's a good answer. It covers the next part of it with the networking piece, so we'll elaborate on that. But just, hey, amen, you know, I'm very pro on training. Anybody that truly knows me knows that. I feel like some departments don't have the call volume to be able to stay proficient in the skills that are expected of them. And even if they are a busy department, you know, you got to, even like a guy like John Sokol will tell you, there's a day set aside for training. There's hours set aside for training, even in the FDNY, you know. We got to train. We got to stay proficient. We can't let things perish. I agree with you. You know, these crazy, and you and I have been, we've both been to them, these crazy drills that they try to do for these check-in-the-box things, you know, they have plane crashes and a train coming through had an explosion, and oh, by the way, there's a gun, a guy with a gun shooting from the roof, and, you know, it's like, Jesus, man, like, even on 9/11, that shit didn't happen, you know, how's all this happening at once, you know, so, you know, I just... I'm with you. You know, we need to make it realistic. We do need to train to a level for preparation. So, you know, not to set people up for failure. However, I'd like to train. There's days where it's the crawl, walk, run, you know. So, you know, we'll do some baby steps on it, you know, and then we're going to be walking into it, and then we're running. And when we're running, it's going to be to a level of exertion. You know, you're going to do some things that are going to really test you. They're going to test your mind, decision-making, as well as your physical skills. And it's not to set people up for failure, because it is realistic. It's just if we put you in a situation where we've trained you up to that drill where you can be prepared to execute those skills, then God forbid in the event of the real-life emergency, you're better prepared now because you've seen something worse. And that's what I like to try to do. I've learned that through my time and through working with, you know, with other people and reading up and taking classes. Another thing that you touched on was, you know, don't just stay in your bubble. There's nothing wrong with the way people do business, okay? I'm not trying to suggest that. However, broaden your horizons, you know, talk to other people, attend the workshops, the conferences, the training in other places. Don't just stick to the same local training from your local area always, or, you know, whatever. Every local area has a way they talk on the radio, right? So, all right, you want to take training on that, make sure it's specific to where you're at. But skills and different things, you know, they come from all over. We got people in this business from all over doing a lot of great things, and, you know, that they may do it better than us, or may do it more proficient than us, or just have another way. And that's why we should network with them, you know. Also, you talked about the going on a mutual aid thing. Yeah, we got to train with our mutual aid partners. You know, where I'm at now, I know that the guys are pro on that, and we're going to start diving into that. I know that that's not something that was regularly done, but we're going to start doing it, you know, because it has to be done. I had success with that in multiple places that I worked before. You expected to go on a call with these guys, they have to know who you are. You know, if at anything, at least like you said, you know, knowing each other's faces and names and, you know, initiating that dialogue and extending the hand and, you know, all that. My buddy Steve Hamilton says, you know, it's done with a handshake and a smile. It's literally that easy. you know. So I'm with you. You know, training is very important, and networking is very important. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I'd like to interject. Let's bring it back to the department level, too. One of the ways we can ensure that this training is effective and our firefighters are becoming proficient is on the drill ground. I'll give an example. We just did some live fire structure training a couple weeks ago and did something a little unexpected. I don't know how often it goes on or how many departments are into it, but I threw my gear on and, you know, I was walking around out on the drill field, seeing what was taking place outside. I was going inside the structure, you know, trying to evaluate how my guys were making entry, forcing doors, going through windows, throwing ladders and things like that. They see that happen and they want to put a little more effort into it. They want to, you know, human nature is to please. So for them to see a chief officer on the drill ground evaluating, getting involved, immersing in their environment, presence, it's going to reward us tenfold. Presence. I got to see what they were doing. I'd bounce out. I'd go talk to my pump operator. Hey, what pressure are you pumping out? How'd you come up with it? I'm checking to see if they learned their hydraulics. They learned how to add some friction loss to another line for a pump pressure. I'm inside the building. I'm watching them make entry through a window. I'm seeing their technique. I'm seeing if they're using tools to assist them. Things like that. I can see what they're doing.
I lost you there, Derek, in your beautiful Alaska wilderness there. You got to cut out for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're good,
training, training and presence from a chief officer go hand in hand. That's all I wanted to touch up on.
No, and I'm with you there, man. It's the same, and just in my position, you know, I'm a chief officer, but I manage the train program, you know. So I love being inside when they're doing burns. I love attending the training. The biggest thing for me is it's not even just to sit there and I'm not saying you were saying this. I'm saying, you know, I was saying training's done for development, not for punishment. You know, we all had that officer that used to show up just to try to catch people doing something wrong and then, you know, try to make a mockery of them in front of everybody. I always hated that. It's happened to me. I always thought, you know, what'd you show up for, jerk off? Go somewhere else, you know. So I try not to do that. Now, I go there because, one, I want to build that relationship. I want them to know who I am, that I'm there, that I'm part of it. But I'm not participating, and it's not that I don't want to, because I do. My job is I'm in a different realm now, so I need to be there to kind of watch things, you know, see it unfold. And I'm learning, too. I'm watching how they're doing. I'm like, okay, you know, this is how they would do it, and blah, blah, so on and so forth. You know, I'll get dirty. I'll go inside. We were doing confined space a week ago, and I went right in the tube, and I was in there, and I got, you know, all my friggin' white shirt all dirty and everything. And, you know, it just – you're there to expose the gaps, to build off of them. You're there to keep everybody operating. You're there to engage with them, to show them that you're part of it, that you believe in them. You're there for that command presence so that they're not just, you know, messing off and not doing it right. But you're also there for continuity. You know, for me, I got multiple shifts that I got to make sure that everybody's at least meeting the objectives. I'm a firm believer, and I don't care if they do it different. You know, if A shift does it different than B shift and the C shift guys do it different than A or B or whatever, I don't care as long as it gets done. I'm actually more pro on them doing it different as long as it gets done. But the objectives need to be met. You know, they still have to get the job done. And we can all talk about why they did it the way they did it and stuff like that. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm into. But I agree with you. A training officer does need to be there. The chief officer, company officer does need to be participating, even if they're taking that role of the evaluator. Throwing your gear on, you know, like I said, you know, I'd love going into burns. In my new job, you know, or the job that I've been doing for the past few years, I don't really fight fires anymore, which sucks, you know, but at least I'm a training officer where I can still go in and see some fire and feel some heat and smoke and everything. So I still get my, you know, I get my my niche or whatever it is, you know, or I scratch my itch, whatever you want to call it. So I get to do that where a lot of people don't. And I'm a believer in that. You know, I like to be in there too, and just being with the guys. It's just that's where it's at. You know, I'm the same with you. You talked about administrative stuff. I'm not going to say that I'm a great administrator. I'm okay at it. I'm actually surprisingly better than I thought I'd be at it. But that came with growth and development and help from, you know, mentors I had, people I worked with, like, you know, Ken Canfield, who's the prevention chief at West Point when I worked there, and Alex Rivera, who was the assistant fire chief up there at West Point. You know, John DeFrancesco, who's now the assistant chief of training. He was a captain at the time when I was there. You know, those guys helped me with administrative stuff and helped build me into doing that better, and I got really good at it. But I like being with the guys. You know, I like attending training. I don't like that mindset of, you know, that you need to sit at the desk. You don't need to be sitting at the desk. There's work to be done at the desk. You know, you're there all week. You can get to that. But when the guys are out training, the training officer should be there. Even if he's taking a backward approach and just watching over, he should be there. I'm with you on that all day. I think that that's where the guy needs to be.
Absolutely.
So, go ahead, brother.
I said, what's next?
What's next? Well, before I go to the next part, I had a request from Scott. You have to say, oh, me, or golly, or whatever it is that you say. You have to do that real quick, and then we'll dive into it.
Oh, hey, man. How about that?
No.
I'll give you that one.
Okay. That's fine. All right.
Golly.
There you go. Oh, man. Those that are listening, I apologize. It's more of an inside joke. But it's something that he says so much. Like straight out of the 1800s, you Southern person. You. Golly. I love it, dude. I love it. Oh, it's my favorite. All right. So moving into it, let's talk about, you know, you named some guys before. You've been doing this for 22 years, right? You've worked with some folks in different places. You've read some books. You've been able to sit in some workshops or whatever and see some of these guys. So who are some of your mentors, and what are some of the things that you still use today? What are some of the things that you gained from them in your success, you know, becoming a battalion chief, having become a company officer captain, and stuff that you keep with you today? You know, who are some of those guys, and what are some of the things that you learned from them?
Well, I'm going to start with those that are closest to me. So, of course, you're one of them. John Heinrichs, Bobby Ross, Doug Fournier, Chris Edsel, Bob Tucker, to name a few. The more illicitly famous one, Ray McCormack, Kurt Isaacson. And where I'm going with this, I can't name them all because there's so many. I learned something from everybody I interact with. From the newest fireman we hired to our most senior guy at the house. And through outside venues, Alabama Fire College, that's where I met you and McGonigal, and lots of other fellas. So we're talking about networking too. You know, going to these classes and sitting there and talking with people, the network has really expanded a lot. And a lot of these things that I learned from people aren't to where they sit me down and they said, let me tell you something. It's through some personal conversations. You know, many of you don't even realize that you're giving away teaching moments as you're giving them. It's a little thing said or an action that was done. That's where I get most of my influence from, the personal talks or the little readings, the one-liners, things like that. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that's when I decided that, you know, maybe I wanted to be a chief officer because maybe I had something I can offer. Maybe I can steer a firefighter in another direction, a positive direction. So I started learning. I started training. I started talking with you guys. Where I get most of my influence is through the talks. I can't even put a finger on one moment or a specific saying, It's just I got a little bit of all of you that's contributed to my evolution. And take it back to the firehouse. I try to apply that daily. You know, I sit there and I talk with the guys. I give them ownership. You know, I don't sit there and run and dictate how I want things done. I give them ownership. We talk about the daily tasks, what needs to be done, and they go forth and do it, and I come up with an end result that I can appreciate, and it gives them buy-in. And all of that is this word, trust. They see I trust them to get stuff done. You know, and I know trust is not an absolute. It never can be, because something's always going to happen that might diminish it a little bit. But I feel us as chief officers, we got to give a blanket trust to everybody. Otherwise, we're not going to get anything done. You know, we keep our eyes open. We're keeping the back of the head. We keep everybody lined up and towards the center and march on. We don't let the daily dramas get ahead of us. You know, if there's something that rolls up dramatic, it's up to us not to make it a crisis. There should never be a crisis in the firehouse. You know, we press on. We worry about ourselves first and how we're conducting ourselves. That's going to emulate to the crew. That's going to spread through the whole firehouse and eventually the whole fire department. And you're going to have a product, a machine that's well-oiled. So, I mean, that's where networking and influence and presence has helped me evolve.
I love that, man. It's it means a lot. You saying what you said with me in it, man. Honestly, I appreciate
love
that.
You,
love you too, brother. No, but I'm with you, man. You know that really is it. You know, I talk about it a lot and I get beat up about it a lot. You know, but the networking thing is it's real. You know, it's nice to, you know, just kind of have those relationships. You know, I call it your Rolodex of resources, you know, having those people that you can pull from time to time. That it's not even just a matter of training topics and training suggestions and all that, because it is that. But it's also, you know, like we have hard times in this job. There's times where, you know, we get beat up or whatever. There's times where we're beating our head against the wall. We're in disagreement with what, you know, what kind of ludicrous policy or change is coming down the pipeline. And you got to call somebody and talk to them about it. You know, just have them kind of talk you off the ledge or have them kind of, you know, give you their perspective on it, try to help you be able to get through it, you know, without airing out too much dirty laundry. But, you know, we're going through some stuff at the department I work for now, you know, and it's tough. It's hurting some morale. And even though it shouldn't be my job, because I just got there and I'm trying to figure it out. It's just how you know, bought in I am on certain things that I feel like it's my responsibility to try to keep them happy. And I'm trying, and it's hard because, you know, you sit there and you kind of agree with where they're at, but you're in a position where you don't want to. You know, it's helped me a great deal and been able to reach out to people and talk to them about the situation that's presenting itself and getting through it, et cetera. You know, so I am, man, I've always been a believer in it. Being able to reach out to those folks that, you know, you can get another perspective from, it's just nothing better than that. And the best part about that is it's free. It's not like calling a lawyer where he's going to charge you $600 an hour to give you some horseshit advice. You know, you talk to anybody about any different topic in what we go through, what we need help with, you know, whether it's an administrative policy, whether it's the development of putting together an SOP or venting to somebody and just letting them be your crying shoulder or whatever, you know, or some training suggestions or topics or how to do something. You know, the possibilities are endless. Just talking to people and reaching out to that Rolodex of resources is just absolutely amazing. You talked about some of your mentors. You know, man, I love that you named a lot of the people that you work with. You know, so we go through these things where, and it's nothing against some of the big name people you mentioned before. Okay. Those guys are mentors in certain ways for me too. You know, especially Lasky, you know, Lasky's book, Pride and Ownership, was a big help for me. I was going through a bad time in 2013 and I was going to quit the fire service and I put myself in some stupid positions that I got myself in some trouble and deservingly so. And I was ready to give up on this thing that I love. And that's probably why people don't understand why I love it so much, because I've gotten a new perspective of it. It's been very rewarding for me. But I've also been able to gain some great mentors through places that I've worked. Guys that are firemen, guys that are captains, guys that are chiefs. Oddly enough, and this is nothing against the chiefs, I've had more mentors that were that I worked with that were firefighters or firemen or, you know, whatever. I call them firemen, you know, whatever. They've helped me through some stuff. As I mentioned before, you know, I got a captain that I work with at where I work now, and he's become a mentor to me. You know, I kind of look up to him in the aspect of, like, I know he's got a great handle on the way things go, and I know that he has an idea and a vision on the way things go. And I honestly, oddly enough, the two of us have probably never thought that we would see things the way that we would see them, the vision of where we would like things to go and how they would go there. We've known each other for, you know, indirectly for over 10 years. And he's truly been, somehow an indirect mentor over the past 6 months that I've been here, just because I find myself seeking his approval or advice on a matter, which, you know, contrary to what I would have thought going into it and others would have told me, I would never have done that. But if they, you know, that's what it's all about, you know, not allowing others to feed you crap about stuff. You know, Derek, you know me, you know, like, there's people that will tell you, you know, I can't believe you're friends with that guy about me. You know, we network with people and we have our mentors for our reasons. Those people help us at a certain time that help develop us, that we can bring that to other people. You know, the indirect impact that has, you know, if I can have a conversation with a person that ends up helping me with what I'm trying to achieve, well, that now impacted 20 people or more. Well, Jesus, you know, I don't really care that your opinion is that we shouldn't be talking to each other, because it just helped 20 more people. You know, so that's the beauty of having those mentors, is it's not just between you and the mentor, but the spread that it has afterward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's almost like a butterfly effect.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect analogy. Like a butterfly effect.
It extends to more than just us.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No, you're good, bro. Clearly, you guys don't have Verizon out there, so the "can you hear me now" thing doesn't work in Alaska, but that's all right. Go roll up a snowball and get some more service.
Yeah, it might help. Tilt my phone to the angle of the satellite.
Yeah. No, so you're good, brother. So let's move into the next part. You know, you've talked to me about this, and I'm aware of what it is, and I'd like you to share it with the people that are listening. This is a hard question for a lot of people to answer, but it's something, especially people that are currently in a leadership role, you know, what is their leadership philosophy? So I'm asking you, what's your leadership philosophy?
Well, my philosophy is empowering those that I work with, below me, above me, and being empowered myself to carry out daily tasks, situational tasks, things like that, through traditional and conventional means. You know, we got a wide variety of people. We got old timers older than us. They were born to bread. Hey, this is how we do things. This is the way we're going to do them. And that's the way it's going to be, you know, kind of a, we don't like to change. We've got us where we're kind of a mix in between that and this new, I call it new stuff, because I have to have a variety of methods to be able to do something. There's just not one leadership theory. There's a magnitude of them, and we got to learn how to apply them within ourselves and with everybody else to get an expected end result. So, you know, we got Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We've got theory X, Y, and Z. We've got lots of others. Those are just to name a few. But we've got to be able to sit there and listen and evaluate the situation, figure out what we want to apply. And a lot of the times, that's the key, is just sitting there and listening, a little bit of presence. And then we can figure out which direction we want to go with it. So I don't have just one leadership style, but that's my philosophy. I figure if we give it to everybody and give them ownership, it's going to take care of itself. We just got to keep it on track.
No, I'm with you. Applying that that to everything you're doing, you know, with what you're trying to achieve, recruiting those teammates, bringing them in, having them be involved, you know, your job essentially is to, like you said, you know, to keep it on track and to keep it balanced, you know, keep it real. Sometimes people have a personal agenda in their feedback or whatever, and that's your job to see how that can fit or marry it into it, or try to discipline it and help, you know, smooth it out a little. But yeah, you know, having the engagement, having those people involved, empowering them, giving them the ownership, you know, I'm not saying it's easy, because it's not, because you deal with certain different things in every different position. But when you're in a position of leadership, it's a position of influence. That's what I explain to people. I don't call it leadership. I call it a position of influence, you know. But with that said, it seems like so hard for people to grasp that if you just empower your people and let them kind of be part of it, your job essentially just becomes the conductor, you know. You just got to call on the trumpets when the trumpets are supposed to play, and then you let them know that you're not supposed to play now. Now it's the drums' turn or whatever. And
yeah,
I'm with you, man. It's a great leadership philosophy, because it's true. You know, we need to just empower our people, give them that opportunity to influence them, to have ownership in what we're doing.
I
like that leadership philosophy.
You know how I think that's facilitated?
I would love to know how you think it's facilitated. If you just move somewhere else in your garage where you're not cutting in and out, you're like,
sorry, brother, man. I think it's facilitated by building those relationships and earning that trust and taking a step back and letting them go.
Yes. Yeah. Trusting, not to set them up for failure by no means. But trusting that, you know, they may fall on their face or something, and that's okay, because, we're there for, you know, and that's what we, you know, our network of people is there for, it is to, you know, let us fall on our face, 'cause that's how you learn from it. You know, it's just, I feel like, I've never been a big person on tests. As you know, you've taken quite a few classes with me, that I have horrible test anxiety. But life is a test in general. You know, us as leaders, you know, we are essentially testing our people. We're giving them the opportunity to now show that they can do the things that we've been helping prepare them for. And if they mess up on it, you know, that's why you get a retake. You know, that's a whole part in this. Just a very, very cliche way to, you know, like the Lion King, but this circle of life type thing, you know, it just keeps reciprocating itself, and it keeps going in a circle, and it makes it beautiful for everybody to be able to continuously spin off of each other and keep it going. I like it. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right. So last and final question for you. Every person I interview, I ask this question. And they always have a hard time answering it. And I always give them the question in advance, and they still always have a hard time. And that's okay, because that's why I keep the question in every one of these segments. So the history of it is I've had my own personal legacy for a number of years. I was accused of having an ego because of my personal legacy, but the person that said that didn't understand where my head was at. My personal legacy remains the same. I grew up in a firehouse where they had a, you know, they talked about this guy, Leo Generelli, and there were pictures on a wall. And every firehouse, we have these pictures on the wall, you know. And we talk about the guys that were in those pictures and what they meant to our firehouse. And I always was fascinated by it, you know. I didn't even know Leo Generelli, and here in every segment I have and every talk that I have publicly and everything, I talk about Leo Generelli, and I never met the guy. He actually died a couple of years before I joined the firehouse. And my goal is to, or my legacy is to be one of those guys that's pictures on the wall that people still talk about. I want to know that I was able to have been able to make that much of a contribution that my picture gets on the wall and somebody knows what it was that I tried to put forth for them to make it a better place for them to work so that they can improve on it. So I ask you, what type of legacy do you want to leave behind?
I'll be honest. I don't want this to come off as rude or sounding with ill intent, but I'm not even bothered if I'm not remembered, because I want everybody in this firehouse, this fire department, or everybody I speak to, associate with, interact with, to be as good as we are as a team. That way, anybody that's looking at them wouldn't have ever known who the leader was. That would be a legacy.
There everybody is a legacy.
Good as the next person.
That is a legacy, and that's something that people will remember you by. So, though I know you were trying to be modest there, you answered the question, and it's a great legacy. You know, people will remember you by that. And even if they don't remember the exact name, the point is that's in place. You know, a legacy to me is a goal that we should have. Everybody should have goals in everything, right? Everything we try to achieve in our life, in our career, with our families, everything, there's goals. So your professional legacy is your goal. It's why you're doing what you're doing, why you go through the things that you go through, so that at the end, you know, there's that goal. And I think that that's why legacies are important. And I think that you just hit the nail right on the head of a very good legacy. And though I appreciate your modesty in trying to say you don't want to be remembered specifically you, Derek Fleeman, but what you're doing has a reason, and your legacy is that your cause is for a good impact on them for the future. And I think that that's beautiful.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So before we wrap it up, you got anything else that you want to say, or, you know, any final alibis or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, I hope I didn't sound too Southern. Everybody understood the message that got out. It's about the people. It's about presence. It's about building relationships. And it's about trust. If we could go through that every day, the goal is to make each person a better version of themselves, not like we want them, and to have a good product that the community and the firehouse is going to appreciate.
That's great, man. I love it. Listen, I'm with you. I love you to death. We've been friends for a few years now. You're a great mentor to me, and you're a great friend, and I love you, man, and I appreciate you taking the time to do the show. For everybody else that's listening, thank you for bearing with me in my voice. I hate that we're living in a time where everybody's got to sit there and be like, oh, you know, you should take it more serious. You should stick that thing up your nose and find out. I promise I don't have friggin' COVID. We're moving forward. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you so much for listening to my brother and my friend, Derek Fleeman. And everybody, until then, listen, stay safe. Take care of each other. God bless. And this has been Dave McGlynn with Networking for Success on Fire Engineering Podcast. Hey, man.